So am I the only person, when they run into a hard name in the Bible, just reads past it? You don't even try, right? It's sort of like a jumbled pronunciation in your head. And if you think about it, there are a lot of names like that in Scripture, aren't there? At least we don't have to read it in the original Hebrew or Greek. It'd be more interesting. However, before we try to pronounce together the name of the main biblical character in today's message, let's go with an easier one. Jonathan. Can everybody say Jonathan, right? Jonathan. Who is Jonathan?
Son of Saul.
Son of Saul, right. First king of Israel. And who was Jonathan's best friend?
David.
David. You got it. Second king of Israel. Were David and Jonathan close? Oh, we've got some. Well, let's see what 1 Samuel 20 verses 12 through 17 says. 1 Samuel 20 verses 12 through 17. So I'm thinking what I may do for a little while is pull a sermon from the Bible reading as I go through the year. This came up this week. I thought it would be a good subject. Maybe that's a good way to do it in general. Just a second here. 1 Samuel, that is, 20, 12 through 17. Are we there?
I'm sorry, what was it?
1 Samuel 20, verses 12 through 17. All set? And Jonathan said to David, "The Lord, the God of Israel, be witness. When I have sounded out my father, about this time tomorrow or the third day, behold, if he is well disposed toward David, shall I not then send and disclose it to you? But should it please my father to do you harm, the Lord do so to Jonathan and more also if I do not disclose it to you and send you away, that you may go in safety. May the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. If I am still alive, show me the steadfast love of the Lord that I may not die. And do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." And Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David saying, "May the Lord take vengeance on David's enemies." And Jonathan made David swear again by his love for him, for he loved him as he loved his own what?
Soul.
As he loved his own soul. How much did David, did Jonathan love David? What does it say?
As much,
right? He loved him as he loved his own soul. Now, after Jonathan and Saul were killed in battle, although I suppose Saul wasn't really killed in battle, right? He would have been killed, but he decided to make sure that they could not mess with him. David describes how close a friend he was with Jonathan in a lament he composed for the two. 2 Samuel 1, 25 through 27. 2 Samuel 1, 25 through 27. Okay, 2 Samuel 1, 25 through 27. "How the mighty have fallen in the midst of the battle. Jonathan lies slain on your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant have you been to me. Your love to me was extraordinary, surpassing the love of women. How the mighty have fallen and the weapons of war perished." How extraordinary was Jonathan's love for David? How extraordinary was it? How did David describe it? Exactly, surpassing the love of women. And no, that does not mean like some liberal, air quote, Christians might say that he was having a homosexual relationship with Jonathan. It had to do with the strength of that love, right? Jonathan was faithful to David even when his father wanted David dead. Now, do you recall in the first scripture reference that we had, Jonathan asking David to be faithful back? So he was faithful to David. Do you remember how he asked him to be faithful back? Just in case, let's take a look. 1 Samuel 20, 14 through 15. 1 Samuel 20, 14 through 15. Are you there? If I am still alive, show me the steadfast love of the Lord that I may not die. And do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. And Jonathan could trust his friend David, which brings us to the hard name, which, to be honest, isn't so hard. It just looks hard. Who was Jonathan's son? Do you remember? Begins with an M. It's a kind of a, to us it'd be a funny sounding name, but Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth. So who was Mephibosheth? Although he's introduced a little earlier in 2 Samuel, we're going to read about him with regards to David's fulfillment of Jonathan's request. This is where we're going to look. This is a long reference, but I think it's important. We're going to look at David's fulfillment of that request from Jonathan that we now have read twice. We can find it in 2 Samuel chapter 9. We're going to look at verses 1 through 13. 2 Samuel chapter 9, verses 1 through 13. And I'm sure I'll mess up some names in this. Come on. My fingers are not calibrated again today. And David said, is there still anyone left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake? Now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba. And they called him to David. And the king said to him, are you Ziba? And he said, I am your servant. And the king said, is there not still someone of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God to him? Ziba said to the king, there is still a son of Jonathan. He is crippled in his feet. The king said to him, where is he? And Ziba said to the king, he is in the house of Machir, the son of Ammiel of Lo-debar. Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, the son of Ammiel of Lo-debar. And Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and paid homage. And David said, Mephibosheth. And he answered, behold, I am your servant. And David said to him, do not fear, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan, and I will restore you to you all the land of Saul, your father, and you may eat at my table always. And he paid homage and said, what is your servant that you should show such regard for a dead dog such as I? Then the king called Ziba, Saul's servant, and said to him, all that belonged to Saul and to all his house I have given to your master's grandson. And you and your sons and your servants shall till the land for him and shall bring in the produce that your master's grandson may have bread to eat. But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall always eat at my table. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, according to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so will your servants do. So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah. And all who lived in Ziba's house became Mephibosheth's servants. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate always at the king's table. Now he was lame in both his feet. Well, other than the fact that I couldn't read today, Was David faithful to Jonathan? Did he do what he promised? Right. Sisko shakes his head. Very much so. He made sure that Mephibosheth, now that may not be that hard to pronounce, but say it five times quickly. He made sure that Mephibosheth was set for life, even though he was lame in both feet. And by the way, if you read back earlier, the reason he was lame in both feet was when the news of Saul and Jonathan being killed happened, the lady who was taking care of him dropped him. And I think he was 5 when that happened. So, and you know what? Mephibosheth was doing pretty good. Until David's son, who was his first son? Do you remember? Begins with an A?
Absalom.
Absalom, right. Rebelled and David fled. Then Mephibosheth had to make a choice of who he was going to support. You may remember hearing about Ziba. Who was Ziba?
Servant.
Servant of Saul, who then became the servant of Mephibosheth. And he was given charge over Mephibosheth. Well, I guess not given charge, really. He was supposed to help out Mephibosheth. And David fled from Absalom. Ziba then had some concerning news about Mephibosheth. And we're going to look at that together. 2 Samuel 16, 1 through 4. 2 Samuel 16, 1 through 4. Are we there? When King David, or when David had passed a little beyond the summit, Ziba the servant of Mephibosheth met him with a couple of donkeys saddled, bearing 200 loaves of bread, 100 bunches of raisins, 100 of summer fruits, and a skin of wine. And the king said to Ziba, "Why have you brought these?" Ziba answered, "The donkeys are for the king's household to ride on, the bread and the summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine for those who faint in the wilderness to drink." And the king said, "And where is your master's son?" Ziba said to the king, "Behold, he remains in Jerusalem, for he said, 'Today the house of Israel will give me back the kingdom of my father.'" Then the king said to Ziba, "Behold, all that belonged to Mephibosheth is now yours." And Ziba said, "I pay homage. Let me ever find favor in your sight, my lord the king." Just a moment. What do you think of Mephibosheth now? What do you think of him based on that? My wife's shaking her head in disgust. What a slime! How could he? David seeks him out, has him eat at his table, and he does this? It sounds like he wants the throne. "Today the house of Israel will give me back the kingdom of my father." What a jerk! But, as Paul Harvey would say, honey,
here's the rest of the story.
Here is the rest of the story. Absalom's rebellion, did it succeed? No. Absalom's rebellion fails, and David returns home. And if you can believe it, Mephibosheth has the guts to go visit the king. Let's take a look at that. 2 Samuel 19, 24 through 30. 2 Samuel 19, 24 through 30. Are we there? And Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king. He had neither taken care of his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he came back into safety. Now, I didn't figure out how many days that was, but he's probably in a pretty bad shape, huh? And when he came to Jerusalem to meet the king said to him, "Why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth?" He answered, "My lord, O king, my servant deceived me, for your servant said to him, 'I will saddle a donkey for myself, that I may ride on it and go with the king, for your servant is lame. He has slandered your servant to my lord the king. But my lord the king is like the angel of God. Do therefore what seems good to you.' For all my father's house were but men doomed to death before my lord the king, but you set your servant among those who eat at your table. What further right have I then to cry to the king?" And the king said to him, "Why speak any more of your affairs? I have decided you and Ziba shall divide the land." And Mephibosheth said to the king, "Oh, let him take it all, since my lord the king has come safely home." Well, that's a bit of a different story than Ziba told, huh? Ziba basically said Mephibosheth wanted to be king, and Mephibosheth said that he asked Ziba to saddle a donkey so he could go off with David, but Ziba left him back and then slandered him to the king. Who was telling the truth? We'll never know for sure the side of eternity. Even King David seems to have had to split the baby, right? Because did he give all the land back to Mephibosheth? Keep it with Ziba? He split it because it wasn't clear. Personally, unless he was an accomplished actor, Mephibosheth seemed genuine, didn't he? In what he was saying? Regardless, if you did not know the whole story of Mephibosheth before this sermon, don't you feel a little bit guilty considering him a slime ball after Ziba's accusations? Do you feel a little bit guilty? You judged him. What a jerk. The king takes care of him. Which brings us to the single point of this sermon. Just have one point. What can we learn from the story of Mephibosheth? That not all hard-looking names are actually hard to pronounce? Is that the thing we can learn? Even though I still trip, like I said, say it over and over and over again. I think part of it is you look at it and it's like, this is going to be hard, and it's not necessarily hard, but you figure it's going to be hard, so you trip on it anyway. No, what we learn from this story is we should do what John 7:24 says, which is, do not judge by appearances, but judge with right judgment. Do not judge by appearances. Things appeared pretty bad after the first one, right? The first quote or section, but judge with right judgment. Now, I could not find any verses that said to be slow to judge, but in order to judge with right judgment, isn't that often a must? I mean, short of seeing somebody do something horrible, and even then you got to watch out. You see somebody shoot somebody else, maybe you caught it after the first threat and the first attack happened, right? But in general, would you agree that to judge with right judgment, you first thing you should do is slow down and gather all the evidence? Ultimately, I could say judge like Jesus, and this is from Isaiah 11:1-4. This is kind of interesting. Isaiah 11:1-4 says, there shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse, and a branch from his root shall bear fruit. So who do you think the fruit, a shoot from the stump of Jesse is? Right, but who ultimately comes from David?
Jesus,
right. And the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and fear of the Lord. And his delight shall be in the fear of the Lord. He shall not judge by what his eyes see, or decide disputes by what his ears hear. But with righteousness he shall judge the poor, and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and he will, with the breath of his lips, he shall kill the wicked. It is dangerous to judge by just what our eyes see and our ears hear. Question is, has there been a Mephibosheth in your life? Someone you judged wrongly? If so, then ask for forgiveness from them and from God. And once again, judge rightly. Judge like who? Judge like Jesus.